Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome to Awakening to True Happiness with modern-day mystic David Hoffmeister, offering you the how-to to spiritual awakening by addressing on a practical level answers to your deepest questions. David Hoffmeister is a world-renowned teacher of A Course in Miracles and has been traveling the world for the past quarter of a century, offering his wisdom to audiences wherever invited. On this show, you'll hear recordings of David's best live talks, inviting you into an experience of deep wisdom and true clarity. To learn more about David, visit his website at davidhoffmeister.com. Awakening to True Happiness with David Hoffmeister is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Good to be back at the monastery. It's good to see all of you. It's always good to come back inside to our purpose, because this world was made that we would forget our purpose. It's quite an extravagant world. It has quite complexity, amazing detail. It's a generated world, it's a projected world, and now we've reached the stage of human evolution where we have movies. I just saw the recent Mission Impossible movie with Tom Cruise, and it was all, this time Tom Cruise was pursuing as Ethan Hunt's an actor. He was pursuing AI. AI was trying to take over the world, and he was going to have to hunt down AI. And then there was a character that was kind of acting on behalf of AI, a human character. But we look at this world, and we can see that movies replicate the world. We have animations, we can see things are being replicated and duplicated and multiplied at an enormously fast speed. And then the question comes back to your mind, like, what's it for me? What is the lesson in all of it? What is the end game? What is the ultimate purpose? I think that's a reasonable question. I think that's a question among questions that have been asked for centuries and centuries and centuries. And we have Jesus telling us pretty straight and leading us. We have mystics and saints, even modern day mystics like Thomas Merton, who spent much of his life in the Abbey of Gethsemane there in Kentucky as a monk. And he would say things like, a day without contemplation is a wasted day. Beautiful idea. And he was talking about contemplating God. If I'm not contemplating you, God, what am I doing? What am I using my mind for if I'm not contemplating you? If I'm not meditating on you, God, if I'm not praying to you, God, to help me, to offer me guidance and instruction, what am I actually doing with my mind's energy? It's a good question. That's a mystic for you. a day without contemplation is a wasted day. For the world, a day without making money is a wasted day. A day without serving bodies in some way, or serving the comforts and the conveniences and the future ambitions of the persons in the bodies, or trying to deny or hide or pretend something about the past, the guilt of the past, the heaviness of the past, it seems like a thick cloud, a burden. And our point is, I think one time I was giving a talk at the monastery years ago, to be carefree, cared for, clueless. Oh, that's the most, I can't even remember the three things anymore. Too clueless. Clueless. I remember my friend Lila was here and her eyes just lit up. Before she came to the monastery, to the community, she was in the corporate world. But she seemed to light up the most about those three ideas, especially the clueless idea. If you're coming, unwinding from corporate, clueless is a, wow, it's a beautiful idea, because it's an invitation to be still. It's an invitation to pull your mind's attention away from the things of the world. But if we come back to our question, what is the end game? What is the point of it all? What is not just a lesson, but what is the ultimate lesson? And Jesus says in Workbook Lesson 132, he says, there is no world, period. This is the central lesson that this course aims to teach. And not everyone is ready to learn it. Wow. Those three sentences tell us a lot. There is no world, period. He has other parts, you know, there is no world apart from what you think, or, but there is no world. This is the central lesson this course aims to teach. There is another part in the workbook when he's talking about perception, our world of images, and he offers a word in the lesson as really what we could say is like a synonym for our perceptual world. What's a synonym for the world from Jesus? Hallucination. Wow. Now just put your little psychological hats on. For a minute, you're a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and you've just been told by the awakened one, the one who has escaped all guilt, all problems, all errors, all sadness, all depression, all fear. You've just heard that he's used that word hallucination. Is not hallucination a better word? He kind of says in there, and he's offering that up as a synonym for perception, really. But again, let's just take it into our mind and be practical with that. If indeed we open our mind just to begin to accept the idea that the world is a hallucination, then the next question in our mind becomes, what then? You see, if Jesus is going to throw that word at us, then we are going to ask the what then question. What do you want of me? How can I be helpful? How can I serve? Oh, hi, Jason. And so, some of you know we have our movie Watcher's Guide to Enlightenment. Has anybody ever seen or heard of the movie A Beautiful Mind? That's a lovely movie, which he's a very famous mathematician, very brilliant mathematician at an Eastern college, university, who progressively seems to experience what most of us call would say seems to be some form of psychology model would call it schizophrenia, where he's seeing people that aren't there. And what did we call in psychology when you see people who aren't there? Hallucination. Okay, that's a good clue. That's a good clue. So, as deep as that is, and that is deep, what Jesus is really saying, and what I've said many times, is it's a perceptual problem. Even if it doesn't seem like a perceptual problem, even if it seems like a body issue, a relationship issue, a financial issue, an issue with what's happening in the world, an issue with the politics of the world, or all the things that seem to come up into awareness. It just seems endless, this trove of consciousness that is sending us all these images. And yet, behind it all, Jesus is saying that there is no world, and this is the central lesson this course aims to teach. So what he's really going at is he's saying that this is a perceptual world. And when he uses workbook lessons like the salvation of the world depends on me, he's not talking about a personality me. That would be ridiculous. Why would the salvation of the world depend on one of the hallucinations? that would make no sense. Even if you talk to most Christians in the world and you say, I had a wonderful insight, the salvation of the world depends on me, probably the Christian would, we got one here. We got one for the mental institution. because through the egoic filter, that seems probably like the most arrogant statements you could ever make. The salvation of the world depends on me. But he's not talking about our personality cells. He's talking about our mind. He's telling us we can choose again. We can choose an entirely different way of looking at the world. We can choose an entirely different way of identifying with ourself. We have the power of decision. We may have denied heaven. We may have denied the power of our mind. We may have denied the power of our choice, but Jesus is saying, now the kingdom of heaven, because you believe in choice, because you believe in images and these hallucinations, you still have not lost your power of decision. Heaven is the decision I must make, is a workbook lesson. Heaven must take the form of a decision. Heaven is not, in reality, a decision, but for the mind that is asleep and dreaming and believes in opposites, believes in multiplicity, duality, believes in all kinds of things that really are not eternal in nature, then forgiveness is a decision, atonement is a decision that must be made. And that's really what our focus is. My friend Resta, one day I was at the Peace House, and she would walk along in this big cemetery very nearby, and back in that day listen to cassettes or the early days of iPods, I think it was called an iPod back in those days, an Apple iPod, and yeah, she was listening to Lesson 132, and she came into the kitchen. She was very frustrated, I could tell. I said, how are you doing? Not very well today. Well, let me make you some tea. We'll just sit down and talk about it. And then when I did make the tea and sat down to talk with her, I said, is something bothering you? And she said, yes. Something's very much bothering me. She said, he's done it. Now he's really done it. And I said, who did it? And she said, Jesus. What did Jesus do? He's gone too far. She had just heard on her iPod Lesson 132. He's gone too far, that's too far. He's crossed the line, that's it. He's just gone too far. And I said, well, let's just sit and talk about it. And we did talk about it for maybe 45 minutes or so. And then she went back to the bathroom to go to the little commode down the hall. And when she sat down in the commode, she started receiving a song from the angels, because she received like 270 some songs. And the song was As If. And it was the angels' song, As If There Is No World. A cosmic dream, a made-up scheme, where figures dance and swirl, and nothing means a thing except the truth within, that I am mind by God designed. He's calling me to live as if there is no world. So when she came back, that was part of her reason she was so upset with Jesus, was when I asked her, why are you so upset at Jesus? Well, he went too far. How did he go too far? She just looked at me and she said with her tea, how is this practical? How is there is no world a practical statement? And I said, he's not asking you to deny the world. He's just asking you to live as if there is no world. What does that mean? Live internally. Live intuitively. Live 100% intuitively. Live by inner guidance. Live by the voice for God within. Live every day, every second, by what that voice instructs you to say or do, until you can take your Truman Show good afternoon, good evening, and good night, and take a nice bow and say, thank you very much, angels. All of you are angels. Wonderful job. Mission accomplished. Good afternoon, good evening, good night. And so in that sense, that's the practicality. The practicality is just living a guided life. That simple. He does say heaven is beyond our curriculum. That's good to know. You know, when we talk about truth or heaven or oneness or divine spirit, that's actually beyond the curriculum. That's why he didn't title his book A Course in Oneness or A Course in Revelation. He titled it A Course in Miracles, because miracles are extremely practical. He's saying, if you knew how far, seeming far, you need to go in terms of steps, that would be too overwhelming. So let's just suffice to say, this is A Course in Miracles, and we're going to work with training your mind to be miraculous, miracle-minded, consistently miracle-minded, and that will suffice. That will take you where you want to go. That will take you toward a memory that you have forgotten, but you want to remember, that you pray to remember, that you pray every day, please help me remember God, help me remember the truth. And then the miracles come as practical, you could say almost little flashes in the mind that just show you everything is perfect. Right-minded seeing can see only perfection. When you're in your right mind, there are no problems. When you're in your right mind, there is no death. When you're in your right mind, there is no challenge. When you're in your right mind, there is no difficulty. And miracles are little glimpses, like little snapshots, little flashes of this right-minded awareness. And that's what the mind training is for. Just to give yourself over, say, I'm just going to give myself to this. I know my unconscious mind will present a lot of objections to the goal of even working miracles. It's not what we grew up with. None of us grew up in a family where when we were kids, you know, they clothed us and, oh, I'm going to send you off to school, but don't worry too much because you're a miracle worker anyway, and, you know, you'll forget all this that you're learning. At some point, wow, if our parents had told us that, no stress going to school, we could treat every class like recess. We could treat every situation, every textbook like recess. The playfulness of it, the lightness, learn what we're drawn to learn, let go of the rest, and then allow our intuition to use whatever we seem to learn in a playful, happy, joyful way to be happy. Learning for happiness, not learning for achievement, future achievement. There's stress at that. You know, will I reach the goal of achievement? Will I reach the status that I believe I need to reach for happiness? Will my life and form turn out in the way that I hope it will? And again, Jesus is just saying, you know, miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. Basically, too, the miracle just, Jesus says, the miracle does not create nor really change it all. It merely looks on devastation and reminds the mind that what it sees is false. That's pretty simple. That's a good definition of a miracle. Looks on devastation and reminds the mind that what it sees is false. Almost gets, you get this image of almost like this ancient, like we'll say a Buddhist monk or Buddhist yogi who's been meditating for many hours, many days, many weeks, many months. And then at one point he just opens his eyes briefly, looks around, and then goes back into meditation, looks on devastation, and is reminded that it's false. Okay. that's enough. Imagine that your draw into meditation was that strong, where you open your eyes after a long period of time and go, thank you, that's enough. Because that's what the miracle is. And the miracle we could equate with healing. So we have to undo a lot of ideas and concepts about healing, because our concepts of healing are really tied to and rooted in the body. And Jesus tells us in the Course, the mind was sick that thought the body could be sick. You see how deep this is. He's saying it's a hallucination. And if you take your hallucination and you try to pick some bits and pieces of the hallucination and say some are sick bodies and some are well bodies, some are happy bodies, some are sad bodies, you're really not getting the point of the central lesson. Because the central lesson is not to pick and choose among the hallucinations, because that's missing the point. The point. It would be like that movie, A Beautiful Mind, trying to tell that mathematician, this is how the world works. Some of the people you see are real, and some of the people you see don't exist. Now, that's a psychiatrist, but probably a lot of medication and a lot of work to try to teach the mind you can tell the difference between the dead people and the living ones, or between the sick ones and the well ones. The whole medical model is based on diagnosing the problem in form and trying to prevent outcomes, namely sickness and death. But we're learning from Jesus, it's all mind, it's all psychological, because it's all the psyche. And so when you try to decide upon the form of what you want, you do lose the understanding of its purpose, because the purpose is forgiveness. The purpose is to see a hallucination as a hallucination. That's how you wake up, is you're not fooled by the trick of the ego. But it's not trying to make better hallucinations. You know, sometimes people work with the Course and they think, well, they say to me, will the Course, if I really study it and practice it, will it improve my life? And I say, well, that depends on how you define life. If you define life by your worldly persona and perception, don't count on the Course. The Course's goal is not aimed at improving the illusion. It's not aimed at improving the hallucination. It may seem that it goes that way a bit, where you do have those thoughts like, I'm doing pretty good, or I've advanced a long way, or things like this. But these are still part of the ego's trick to keep the mind from going to the wake-up point, you know, to be content with pretty good. There was a movie, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. Some of you saw that movie about Dan Millman's life, and Socrates, his teacher, comes pretty far along in the movie when he's working with Dan, and basically he does a few things to try to give some contrast experiences, and finally Socrates says to Dan, "There is no better. We're not any better than anyone else. No one else is any better than us because there is not a better. And if there is not a better, you know what follows from that. There is no worse either." Whoa, well, that's pretty relaxing. You can feel the stress start to go from your mind, because think of all the stress that's just associated with the concepts of better and worse. What does Jesus say? All things work together for good. There are no exceptions except in the ego's judgment, that everything is always working together for good. From the right mind perspective, that's absolutely true. That's an absolute statement, because from the right mind there is no error. The right mind is the correction to the error of the ego and the error to linear time. So again, if we come back to the basic premise of, if the world is a hallucination, if there ultimately there is no world, then that must mean I'm working on a direct experience of innocence, a direct experience of all is working together for the good, a direct experience of all is good. God is good always, and always God is good. You could say that about your identity. My identity as Christ is always good. God created Christ. There's nothing but goodness. There's nothing but innocence. And then this world becomes just an opportunity. You might just say the world is nothing more than maybe a practice ground for doing the mind training. And so this is ultimately why, as you go deeper and deeper, you start to step away from the things that you seem to do, the things that you thought you were, become not appealing. They're not appealing. They do start to feel more like old news. like my friend Dorothy, whenever anybody would present her with an issue or problem. She was up there at Roscoe with me and Ken Wapnick. Dorothy would say, "So what? Now what?" That was her simple way of coming back to the moment. So what? Now what? You know, like, don't get caught into the story. Don't get caught in the interpretation. So what? Now what? Now what? That's a very practical question. What now? Now what? And that is really beautiful, because when you start to really feel this, then you start to see, wow, that's what I'm going to devote my mind energy to now, to allowing the Holy Spirit to heal my mind, to becoming 100% intuitive, to inner listening. All pathways really actually promote inner listening. You know, that's part of all core religions and core spiritualities, is inner listening. And that's why, I think, because that's the point. That's the core point of everything, is that inner listening. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's where the practicality comes in, when you get in touch with that guidance. Because then you can feel the reward of the guidance, of listening and following the guidance in this instant. You don't have to wait for a future reward. You don't have to wait for it to pay off some time in the future. You get an instant reward. Psychologists say the problem with this world, one of them is people are all searching for instant gratification. And this is not the same instant. This is not the ego's gratification through the body. This is gratification of coming deeper into the holy instant and really living by it and merging into it, accepting it. But in one sense, it does, there's a Kenny Loggins song, some of you know Kenny Loggins, he did a song called Keep the Fire. And one of the lines I like was, further and further from things that we've done, leaving them one by one. Oh, what a beautiful line. It's kind of going on a journey and letting the past drift away in your mind, fade away, further and further from the things that we've done, leaving them one by one. And we have just begun. The song is, it's called Watching the River Run, not Keep the Fire, Watching the River Run. So that's really what our focus is, because you have the ability to feel what you're feeling, to acknowledge what you're feeling, to acknowledge when you feel happy, and also to acknowledge when you don't feel happy, when you feel like you're chasing something or you're looking for something or you feel unfulfilled. That is an ego emotion that fits in with the ego, with the death wish, unfulfillment. And then right-mindedness, you might say, is the goal of atonement or forgiveness, because the fulfillment is in the right-mindedness. It's not in an outcome of the world. We have been tricked into defining death in terms of the world. We have been tricked into believing that bodies die. We've also been tricked into believing that they're born. We've been tricked into reincarnation. We've been tricked into all kinds of concepts that still are attempts to explain the error. Even reincarnation is kind of an ingenious attempt to explain time and eternity and console yourself and say, well, I believe I'm incarnated now, but hopefully someday I won't be an incarnate being. I will just be a pure spiritual being. But there's lifetimes involved, and there's lots of lessons to learn, multiple lessons, but that's still part of the trick. It's still trying to explain the error instead of to accept the correction. So that's why this is such a deep path. It's not here to explain anything. It's not here to describe anything. It's just here to take the mind into an experience. And also your pursuit of happiness begins to shift to more of a how do I feel now perspective than, I mean, the game that I played for many, many years, actually decades, was I'll be happy when. I had all my ambitions lined up after the when. I'll be happy when my life looks this way. I'll be happy when I achieve these things. I won't rest until I've achieved and accomplished this and this and this and this. And then I was told, good, 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 you're ambitious. And then I watched that Gandhi movie, and he was walking along with this man named Walker, and they're walking along talking. I think they were in South Africa. And this reporter, Walker, turned to Gandhi and said, looked around at the ashram that Gandhi was seemingly building, and said, Mr. Gandhi, you're quite an ambitious fellow. To which Gandhi replied, I hope not. That's great. I was quite identified as an American with ambitions. I had to pause the movie. What? What did he say? Shh, rewind. You're quite an ambitious fellow. I hope not. Ooh, I hope not. There's a glitch in the matrix. Gandhi is exposing a glitch. Ooh. What if we had it wrong? What if we were moving in the wrong direction? You know, like the Paul Simon song, Slip Sliding Away. The nearer your destination, the more you're slip sliding away. The nearer your destination in terms of a future form, the more you're slip sliding away from your Christ mind, awareness of your Christ mind. Whoa, that's a 360 turn. So, and I think actually, you know, we've gone along, we've had, I look at our ministry even, we've had this fun ministry, but now there's shifts and changes even coming within our ministry. You know, been talking about mysticism, but now I think for some of us, we no longer feel the need to talk the talk or even to walk the talk, because the walking the talk involves the body too. We're ready to be finished with talk the talk and walk the talk. And this isn't like skipping over anything. This is just a natural fading away in the mind of a desire to focus on the body and activities and things of the world. It's just a natural draw into the stillness. And so walk the talk, talk the talk, yap, 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 yap. It's all the same. And we feel like it's like a big kind of a stepping back. In some sense, it's like the spiritual version of, I was thinking, I remember for years I used to watch the Olympics, and I really like watching gymnastics. Remember the gymnast, Nadia Comaneci? Remember when she would get up on the bar, the rings, and but she'd get on the bar and she would be flipping around and around and around, and I'd be like, wow, it's a little bar, and she doesn't even seem to be aware. She's fearless. And then the judges, 10, 10, 10, 10. She's getting tens, perfect 10 scores and everything. And Jesus was reminding me of Nadia the other day, and he said, and now it's time for your dismount. Dismount. Even Nadia, who got up on the bar and flipped and flipped and flipped around, and the judges 10, 10, 10, Nadia had to do a dismount. She had to leave the bar to end the program. She really had to have a dismount. So it was beautiful. I kept hearing Jesus, now the dismount. So it's almost like if the world's a hallucination and you mounted the world somehow, you took it too seriously, you got too involved. What's that movie, The Nines, where the blonde woman says, you know, we got too involved, you know, you'll be back if you can't do it both ways, you'll be counting the pine cones. She says, if you try to stay involved with the world, you'll still be counting the pine cones. That's not a dismount. That's just another distraction. So clearly, even with our ministry, you know, it's going to be changing significantly. I mean, here, this is Living Miracles Monastery, so that's what monasteries are for. That's what, if you ask Thomas Merton, why are you at the Abbey of Gethsemane, and he would say, honestly? And you said, yeah, why are you at the Abbey of Gethsemane? He would say, probably to pray to God and contemplate God's grace or something like that. That's the purpose. That's the purpose of a monastery. In fact, that's the purpose of anything. That's the purpose of a city. That's the purpose of a house. That's the purpose of everything in the world, is to pray to God and contemplate God's grace and God's eternal nature and gifts. And if the mind gets distracted off into other things, then Thomas Merton would say, you know, that's a problem. In fact, he wrote and wrote and wrote. He wrote prolifically, but he's one of the few monks that I know that basically was so devoted to his function of writing that basically they built him a cabin in the woods down on the lands in Kentucky, in the Abbey of Gethsemane, because he did do a lot of writing but he didn't really need to be around priests and other monks for that function. He just wrote prolifically, he prayed, he contemplated, and then at the end of his life, you know, just like Francis and JP took a little trip as a whim, Thomas Merton took a trip across to the Far East, I think it was Thailand, and where he, I think he stepped in some water when a fan fell over and he was electrocuted. That was, but I did hear his last talk that he gave before he was electrocuted, and that's just another way of laying aside the body. It's nothing, nothing. It's quick. That's very fast, very efficient too. I think, you know, it's like he wasn't messing around. A day without contemplating God is a wasted day. But I did listen to his last talk without knowing that he was electrocuted, because I listened to the talk and I had this deep feeling in my heart when I was listening to the audio, not knowing anything about how he died, seemed to die. But when I was listening to his last talk, he was so happy. I thought, yeah, this guy is really happy. And then I thought, he's saying goodbye. I felt that when I was listening to the talk. I said, he's doing his Truman Show thing. He's about to take an exit. And before they turned the microphone off, I think his last words were, "Let's go have a Coke." It was very hot. I even remembered his last words that were recorded. I thought, he's happy. And then, "Let's go have a Coke." And then that was it. That was the last talk. But that's important, because that's a dismount. You know, you have to always be ready for the dismount. And I think in A Course in Miracles, when you give yourself over to the Course, you know the direction Jesus is taking you. He's taking you to the light. And going to the light seems to involve a dismount of the hallucination. You know, that's what awakening is all about. You have to include the dismount. You cannot skip over the dismount. And that's what this is about. That's what we're going into. So yeah, I've had that feeling for some weeks. I've had people, the ministry will seem to shift this year pretty radically, dramatically, pretty drastically, I guess, in the sense that's the way it was for us. When we got into this, everything in our world shifted dramatically. Then we just got used. We got used. We were in the happy prayer every day of, use me, Jesus, use me, Holy Spirit. We were in the joy of, use me, use me, use me. And Bill Withers passed away. Does anybody remember Bill Withers? He had a song called Use Me. "You just keep on using me until you use me up. Until you use me up." Oh, that's beautiful. That's explaining the dismount. That's how you dismount, by being used fully, by being used 100%. You use until you use me up, until you use mini me up. there's actual me and mini me. So you, Spirit, use mini me until you use me up, until you use mini me up, until there's no division anymore between the Christ me and the mini me. It says in the Course, you know, it says, "Was Jesus the Christ?" And the answer is, "Oh yes, along with you." that's how it addressed. Was Jesus the Christ? "Oh yes, along with you." He seemed to have a body that was separate and apart, walking apart from other bodies. Oh, that's a very kind of a, imagine that, getting that on your ChatGPT. "You seem to have a body walking apart from other bodies, but he is you, and you are him. You are the divine Christ. You always have been, always will be. You are as God created you." Once our chatbot's ready, I hope it gives answers like that. you're having a stressful day. Whew, you go in the bathroom, you come out. What was I thinking? How could I have been so mesmerized to think such tiny thoughts when that's not the truth of it, never was the truth of it? You know, that's the joy. That's the joy that we have, is the experience of the vastness. You know, that's the point. So it's interesting. We shared so much, and then there was so much travel, and so much travel to so many countries and so many retreats and so many things. And who knows, maybe in the world of form, the beat goes on. But I don't think it will be the same characters. Some of us are. We've been watching this movie with these characters for a long time, and it's just a feeling of stepping back. And then with it, just like there were those that came before us, you know, everywhere I would go, when I went to Mexico, I met this man named Ray Padilla, and he knew this woman. I think at one point she had dated even Frank Sinatra back in the day, but she became a course student, and then she became like really active with the course. And then she was down there in Chapala, Lake Chapala area, before I even got there. She passed away, but I never did get to meet her. But Ray said, oh, yeah, Judy and Whit would come down and visit her all the time. Oh, well, Judy and Whit were down here, too, before we came down there. We weren't the first ones to bring the course to the area. We're just rolling in along the parade of bodies and hallucinations. But there was this woman, and then Judy Witt were there. They would go down there frequently, maybe even annually, to visit her and everything. And that's what I find when I've traveled around the world to all these countries. You know, I meet people, and I get to hear stories of some of the forerunners with the Course in Miracles. You know, we even have some booklets, the Varleys, you know, starting off in, you know, back around 1980, late 70s, early 80s, and there's just been a lot of, and there's, the beat just goes on, and then here comes the next wave, and it's all part of Jesus's plan of helping the mind to realize that it's a hallucination. That's all. It's not going anywhere in form. It's just reminding over and over how purely innocent we are, over and over that we are loved, over and over that we never could make a mistake, over and over that we're divine. Over and over, the beat goes on, the characters come, the characters go, the places seem to shift. But behind all of the appearances is a beautiful central lesson. There is no world. Imagine. Wow. I would have never imagined that was the central lesson. Okay, let me get this straight. I came to this world to see that the world's not real. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's it. The Holy Spirit uses time to teach that there is no time. Yeah. Oh, that's a deep central lesson. That's not about making the world a better place. That's not about fixing the world. That's not about changing the world. Wow, what a relief to open up to the central lesson, because then you can see where it leads to peace. It leads to inner peace. Because then you can let all things be exactly as they are. Then you can really just watch the world with a place of acceptance in your own mind, not trying to accept images, but just acceptance of the grace of God. And that way also you're freed up from trying to figure out the world. You're freed up from trying to understand the world. I think that's been an issue in terms of the world, is trying to understand it. Francis and JP just took their 7-week trip, and Francis was telling me that, you know, wherever she went, she just, I was asking her, I said, what was your impression? She said, wow, lots of people are giving their heart over to this, but her main impression from traveling around was that Course in Miracles students beat themselves up. They take things way too seriously. They feel hesitant to make a move. They're afraid to go back. They're afraid to go ahead. They become paralyzed in the metaphysics, and then the shoulds and ought tos of the ego creep in and bring in a paralysis, afraid to go ahead, afraid to go behind. Yeah, you know, Joanne and I, we talked about, you know, the ego will try to intellectualize things to prevent an experience. But it was beautiful because Francis and JP, Francis did a lot of experiential exercises, you know, eye-gazing exercises, all kinds of different exercises with people to provide immediate help, you know, to come inside to an experience, which is so important. And that's the prayer of the heart. That's what people were praying for. They were praying to feel peace. They were praying to feel innocence. They were praying to feel happy, lighthearted, to be laughing, to feel joy. You know, that is the prayer of our heart, not to get sidetracked or to get taken on some kind of delay that you go out on and you think, how did I get out here? Where did I turn to get out into this aspect of much ado about nothing? Shakespeare said it was much ado about nothing, but how did I try to make something out of nothing? And then, oh, okay, oops. And then to drop it, you know, to not beat yourself up about the oops, you know, to make it a drop. So that's, I think that's really important, you know, because, I guess you've been, what, some of you have seen some of our improv online revivals. Andy was saying when we were driving back from the airport, he was saying, well, we've never done anything like this. I said, yeah, for sure. I saw the revivals. I thought, yeah, we've never done anything like this. But I think it's, in one sense, it's a good thing. As long, I mean, from the beginning of the idea, I thought, we shouldn't think of this as events, weekend events. This should be, improv is your lifestyle. Living your life, improv, where you're so intuitive that you can just, in the spur of the moment, say, oh, this is what I feel, here's what I'm going to, and you really go for it with your intuition, and then you start to feel like the whole world is improv. Your character goes from kind of constricted and constrained to, you start feeling more like Robin Williams. He was like a master of improv. That's why he was so funny, because he was so spontaneous. He wasn't tied in. I mean, actually, improv, that Lisa and I used to talk about that. That's the kind of shows we grew up with Carol Burnett, Vicki Lawrence, Tim Conway, Harvey Korman. Oh my gosh, they started off the skits, but then they always, somebody was doing improv in there. And then the others started to try to fight back laughter, and then everyone was laughing because everything, it wasn't a planned skit. I've even seen some Saturday Night Lights live skits where someone in the middle of the skit, you know, just decides to go into improv mode. And then just the look, you just see it on some of the faces of the actors and actresses. They're like, because they know they're live, they have to go on with the skit, and somebody's just gone rogue. they've gone rogue with the whole skit. And then it's quite funny. Then it makes it definitely makes YouTube when someone goes rogue, and then everything is funnier in the skit itself because everyone's like, we're off the rails now. Like, how are we going to do this? How is it going to end? You know, and then people get into the joy of it. Yeah. That's the way it goes, that you start to realize that nothing in terms of the details has ever really meant what you thought it meant, but it was all part of a plan designed to help you laugh. That the whole thing was like a comedy. Not that the hallucination was the comedy, but the perspective that you have on looking on the hallucination makes it a comedy. In that sense, it's a divine comedy, because there's a gentle laughter of the Holy Spirit underneath it. Like, ah, isn't this fun watching it this way? You don't have to take it seriously. Nothing was what you thought it was. You were never harmed. You were never mistreated. You just thought you were. You were just mistaken about the perspective on the hallucination. But you were not the victim of it. You were never the victim of it. You are now totally returned to your empowered mind and delivered from the hallucination in this miraculous way of looking at the world.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Awakening to True Happiness with modern-day mystic David Hoffmeister. You can access more of David's teachings by visiting his website at davidhoffmeister.com. Tune in to David again next week on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 radio network.